VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live in the studio and welcoming everyone, all you regulars. Thanks for always coming back. We appreciate it. And if you're new to the show, you can stick around, hopefully, for an hour and listen in or even chime in. And if you have questions, callers always go to the front of our agenda. And otherwise, I promise you all the time, I will promise you very little, but I will promise you, you will find out something in the course of this hour that you didn't know. And I've never been challenged successfully on that, because after all, I bring stuff in here every day that I didn't know until I looked it up. So, just makes sense, right? Anyway, lots going on out there. Needless to say, it's going to be a really, really interesting day full of topics, and the news, as was indicated at the close of the real estate show, Adam had a couple of thumbs up, and there's good reason for that, and I see no reason to waste any time getting there. So how good was it?
It was really good.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not just here, but overseas as well.
You know what? I was thinking about the Trump rally the other night. I'm just so tired of winning all the time. How's that?
Winning in what way?
Well, in my case, the market.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was a good week. And if you remember a couple of weeks ago, I might have said that I really liked international right now, and that's looking even better this week. So
nailed it.
Yep. Not too bad. A lot of money flowed out of bonds this week, and we saw yields climb, which is generally a good thing for stocks, and it was, because most of that money went directly into equities. The U.S. market is now up over 23% on the year, and there are actually several other countries that are outperforming that. Greece is up over 40%, Russia over 37%.
Is it because they've suddenly come to their senses?
No.
Or was it because they were pummeled and
they were oversold at some point? Yeah, they really got destroyed a few years ago. Actually, right when we started this show, Greece was going through huge turmoil. Yeah. And I believe it was Chelsea Clinton's husband that started a hedge fund that was going to invest in Greece, and it went out of business in about 3 months. There just was no money to be made at that time. But this year, if he had been able to stick around, he probably would have done really well.
That's a crying shame.
I don't know the guy, but there's a bunch of European countries that are also outperforming the U.S. this year. China is a little bit under us. They're up 18%. But if you look at their terrible economic data, that's still a pretty good year for them, because the news over there is not good right now. The S&P tacked on an additional 0.9% this week, while the NASDAQ and the Dow both added more than 1%. The fourth quarter is off to a really great start. The S&P has added more than 5%, the Dow over 4%, and the NASDAQ almost 6%. A Santa Claus rally would make this a really great year. So we'll see if that occurs. Hopefully not another repeat of last year.
That was a Santa Claus. Well, actually, a Santa Claus rally is supposed to come right after Christmas. It did.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe that was the quintessential Santa Claus rally.
It was big in terms of points. It wasn't that big in terms of percentage for the last year, but it did save the... It could have been a much worse year if we had not seen the 3 or 4 days after Christmas.
Yeah, I actually did some comparison on that. I got a couple numbers when we've wrapped up to that point.
All right. Earnings season is now in the home stretch for the third quarter, and things are going pretty well. The earnings beat rate came down this week, but only to 65.2, down from about 70%, which isn't a recent cycle high, but it's still a solid number. The second quarter rate was around 55%, so it's a 10% improvement over last quarter. The revenue beat rate stayed right around 58% this week, which is slightly higher than the previous two quarters. If it ends here, I would call it a win based on the pretty poor guidance going into the quarter. Mm-hmm. Technology has the highest beat rate of any sector at 77%, followed by healthcare and financials. Utilities and materials have the lowest beat rate at 54%, and energy is just a bit above that at 55%. Still more than half, though. So it's not a huge positive, but it's not really a negative either. Economic data this week was pretty ugly. Only 5 of the 20 data points released met or beat expectations. Fortunately, some of the more important releases actually fell into those 5. So that's the only good news. The ISM non-manufacturing index was forecast to rise to 53.5, but instead it rose more than that to 54.7. That's a really strong beat, and that is really the engine that drives our economy. So that could mean good things for November. One of the big reasons that this number looking good is that people are employed, and that was again shown in the initial jobless claims numbers, which beat expectations coming in at 211,000. That also fit with the University of Michigan's consumer sentiment coming in above expectations at 95.7. As long as Americans are working, spending, and feeling good about their financial situation, we should be in good shape.
They have no right to be that happy. After all, there's a recession coming. Someday.
Has been for quite a while.
Yeah.
The numbers that missed expectations this week included durable goods orders, factory orders, and capital goods orders. For some reason, consumers are feeling good about their situations, but businesses are not.
I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
They're waiting for China to settle.
Well, that's one of my theories. There's really a disconnect there, though. It seems that if consumers get out and shop during the holiday season, then businesses will have to start feeling better about their situation. Or the China deal needs to get done. I'm not sure which it is, but there's a real lack of happy sentiment in the business side of things right now. And I don't exactly know why there's such a big disconnect.
Maybe they listen to the mainstream media.
Yes. I mean, I could believe that if it was a portion of it, but not the entire business community can't be the only thing that's going on.
No, I agree. But I do think a lot of it is the uncertainty that they're facing with the China deal and the Brexit. And, you know, everywhere you look, there's uncertainty. I'm sure they'd love to be plowing money into factories and so on right now. But if none of this stuff goes,
yeah,
then they don't want to be caught, you know, with their big expenditure already started.
Right. That's fair. The JOLTS report also missed expectations this week, coming in at 7,024,000 open jobs versus the expectations of 7,063,000. Not a huge difference, but there is a pretty clear trend here. That number was at 7.5 million not that long ago, and it's unclear to me if these jobs are just getting filled by people coming back in the workforce. That is definitely a possibility. Or if companies are figuring out ways to get these jobs filled without a person. So automation, increased productivity, there was a bad productivity report this month too.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
It was. It was kind of a outlier, really.
That was the word I was thinking.
But we'll see what happens next month on that one. I'm not going to dwell too much on that.
No.
But it is weird that the number of open jobs are coming down. That can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. So we'll have to try and flesh that out some more in the coming weeks. The good news about that is that even at 7,024,000, it's still well above the number of available workers out there. So there's still more jobs than workers.
Yep. I took a look at that December 24th thing, and, you know, today the Dow is at 27,681, and I don't care who you are. That's a big number, 27,681. But on December 24th, it was 21,792. Thank you. I have it right here on yellow. I couldn't find it. It was hidden by all the yellow. Yeah, 21.7 to 27.7. Now, on December 1, it's looking more and more like I'm going to say, bad idea. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
Thought we'd do a trivia question on real estate this week, so in case Howard and Angela are still listening, they can catch this one. It's been a long time since the financial crisis of 08, but interestingly enough, home prices did not really bottom out until, depending on the city, 2011 to 2012. They headed down through the crisis, and they turned around a little later than the market did, and so on. And some cities got hurt more than others. There are 20 big cities, 20 of the biggest cities that are covered by the Case-Shiller Index, which is a pretty reliable gauge of home prices. So we've got a trivia question on that one today. Since the very bottom in 11 or 12, whichever the city was, the ones that have led the way, San Francisco is up 128% in their housing prices. Second is Las Vegas. That's up 116%. Most cities now are above where they were finally in the pre-crash numbers. So it took a long time to get back to the pre-crash numbers. But not everybody's there. What city has the most ground to catch up on just to get back to their pre-crash numbers out of the 20 big cities in the country? And you can guess away, you only got 20 choices if you know what's in the index. I guess other than that, you'd have more choices. It's not Jacksonville, Florida.
That's not even included in the index. So Tampa.
Well, and that's a good reason not to have it. Okay. Anyway, which city has the longest way to go just to get back where they were? Anything else you want to wrap up on the market?
The only other thing that I had noted was the bullish sentiment rose dramatically this week. That's not good.
Not good.
No.
Although it was so low.
It was really low. It's not even really high yet. It's just a lot higher than where it was last week. Our regular listeners know that we love it when investors are bearish because that's typically when the market goes up, and it was proven in the last couple weeks.
I find one of the more interesting things that happened over the last year when Federal Reserve was raising interest rates a couple of years ago. It wasn't really affecting mortgages much. Now they start lowering them, and it seems to be completely disjointed. The Fed has very little to say about what the bond yields and mortgages have been. But now, because everybody's been flowing out of stocks, you should see the billions of dollars that have flowed out of stocks this year. It is unbelievable. While the market was going nothing but up, money was flowing out of the market. But now, all of a sudden, it appears that people are getting very bearish on the bond market. So there's going to be some more selling in bonds, some more buying in stocks, and you're going to see interest rates move up again. And all I can say to that is, thank goodness, we need it. But if you're about to make a big purchase, I would get moving right now.
Yeah, you did not want to be in long bonds this week, like TLT.
Right.
That was not a good play this week. It's been run up. In fact, I think we talked about it a few months ago that TLT was up over 20% on the year.
It was the number one asset class for a while.
That's not good.
No, that should never happen.
No.
So if you are looking for a major purchase, why don't you treat yourself to a Christmas present this year? You will not regret it, I don't believe. Just saying. All right. We set records, three times this week, three times last week? But interestingly, yesterday, all three major market indices closed at record highs. And on the way to the close, all three hit new intraday highs. Now, that is kind of a remarkable achievement, wouldn't you think? Wouldn't you think that the financial media would be touting this, saying, oh, my gosh, people, things are really good? Well, if you think that, you would be wrong. And I'll show you a little bit of why. Morgan Stanley says, hold celebration on the Dow record. Dismal returns are coming. Really? When? Saturday, this morning, bright and early, I started cruising around. So first I went to Yahoo News, and there was nothing about the market highs. So I went over to MarketWatch. Now, MarketWatch, you'd think, would be saturated with news about good things that happen in the market. They had one story, a guy named Jim Lee or something like that, nobody had ever heard of, was predicting a Santa Claus rally. That was it. There were no other market stories there. I clicked on their economy and politics tabs, and here's what I found out. Jeff Bezos' mansion has 25 bathrooms, and that is just another reason to soak the rich. That was the story on MarketWatch on economy and politics. So I went over to Google, and I Googled the record closing day, and I didn't get anything. So I learned, I cut down the search parameter to 24 hours, and I did get one mention attributable to USA Today, but it wasn't even the first in line. I had to read down the page to get there. The preponderance of stories were that Mike Bloomberg is inching closer to getting in the presidential race, which is apparently much bigger news than all three market indices setting brand new records on the same day. And speaking of Bloomberg, this week's winner is from Bloomberg News. The headline said, "Trading slump deepens. It's as if J.P. Morgan and Goldman vanished." Now, what do you suppose that's a story about?
I really don't know.
It is a story about the trading desks at J.P. Morgan and Goldman reducing their revenue because commissions and trading fees are dropping across the world, basically, but especially in this country. Can anybody think of a reason why that might happen? Oh, how about a few reasons? Schwab, TD Ameritrade, E-Trade, Fidelity. Could it be, now get this, sit down out there if you're about to get an economics lesson. Competition forces prices down. Got it?
Yep.
It's shocking, I know. That is what I found the morning after the best day in the market since anybody can remember. Very seldom do all three set a record on one day.
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable.
It is unbearable, people, to be in a business like ours and have to put up with this crap. I didn't.
All right. Well, if you're going to be so negative, I'm going to have to give some positive
headlines.
Oh, I'll
turn better after the break.
Okay. But there was some good news this
week.
Okay,
good. We need it.
One thing that I found was pretty cool, and I was going to use this as the trivia last week, but we didn't actually get to it, and we went with a different trivia question. But you know the answer, but
I won't tell.
Okay. What do you think the online spending between November 1st and December 31st per day will be in the United States? And this includes Amazon and every other website. So it's a big, big number. But on average, the Adobe Analytics is forecasting that online spending will exceed $1 billion per day.
Per day.
For the two months to end this year. Now, does that sound like an economy that's in trouble?
No, maybe a bunch of people get in trouble because of their increased debt.
Well, yeah, I mean, getting the credit card companies, I mean, buy Amex right now because this is going to be good for credit card companies. $1 billion a day in November and December.
Yeah, there's a company called Fiserv out there.
Their job is
to process credit card transactions. My God, they're just so successful they can hardly stand it.
They had a good week, too.
Yeah.
So other good news, this one's more local. Jacksonville Skyline is going to look a little bit different here in a few years.
When Trump Tower goes up?
Nope. FIS, actually, is our Fortune 500 company based here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. They are going to build a $145 million new headquarter building in Riverside and create 500 additional jobs.
Always.
Yeah. So, and those are going to be pretty well-paying jobs as well. So yeah, that's the really good news for Jacksonville. Big win for the governor and the mayor and the Chamber of Commerce. So,
and 500 people yet to be named.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
Really good news.
Yeah, actually, this is just a great place to live right now.
Absolutely.
Jacksonville has languished over decades and decades, and it is really coming into its own right now.
It's funny. I was thinking that on the drive to the show today. Mm-hmm. There was some major work going on San Pablo. There's going to be two new big developments on the south side of Beach Boulevard there. And then I got on Butler, and there's new condo or apartment complexes mm-hmm. going in at least three different places along Butler.
Where do these people come from?
It's amazing. I don't know where they're coming from, but there's a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. And, of course, Mayo can't stop.
No.
Every time you turn around, they're breaking ground on another gigantic building and hiring more and more people. It is truly a wonderful place to live right now. The only thing I would ask is that some of the powers that be in the city try very hard to remember that with increased traffic, we need bigger and better roads. I know there's some things happening, but they're always behind, it seems to me. Remember, the trivia question is still out there. What city of the large 20 in the country has the most ground to make up before their housing prices are back to the pre-recession highs? And it's an interesting answer. That's all I can tell you. All right, we're going to take a little break here in about a half a minute, and then I'm going to read you a letter that we sent out to our clients this week about our feelings in the market and so on. I just don't feel like there's adequate news out there. If you listen to everybody in the mainstream media, you would not believe that you're going to be making money in your 401k, and then you open it, and it's there. All right, don't go away. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And this is Ron. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vanway. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I don't know if you're allowed to speak about this or not, but I was going to ask about your opinion of Jim Cramer on Mad Money.
We're definitely allowed to talk about whatever we want.
That's
to.
Right. So. Can I answer that with a question, as I so often do? Would you be more likely to do business with me if I pushed my sleeves up and got on top of my desk and jumped up and down and yelled and screamed?
No, I don't think that would entice me.
You just answered the question, didn't you?
Okay, yeah, I think so.
But Ron,
he is an entertainer, remember that.
Exactly.
And a darn good one, too.
I was going to say, I do enjoy watching him.
Yep.
I find him very entertaining.
Absolutely.
I generally like him, but if you go by some of his stock picks, it's not always the best advice.
My only complaint really about him, despite all his bravado and all, is that he has too much following, and he has really hurt some companies by saying some bad things about him. And that's few and far between, and it's nothing I'm going to spend my life worrying about. But do I take him as a guru? No, I take him as a comedian, more or less.
Yeah.
Okay.
As with any stock picker, he's hit some big ones.
Yep.
But we've also had some clients come in and say, or before they became clients, and say, well, I bought this on Cramer's advice, and it did not work out well. So that's going to happen with any stock picker, but he's just so famous and has so much power because of the platform that he has that it's there's a lot of responsibility that goes with a job like that, and to lose people that much money is I don't know if it's irresponsible, but it's not the best.
I have one more little aside on that too. Out of the former team of Kudlow and Cramer, I really like to listen to one of those.
I agree. I was kind of disappointed when he got hired by President Trump.
Oh, he's out there. He's still out there now.
He's doing much better.
Yeah,
he's doing a better job for us in his current position anyway.
Really? And he came back from, what did he have, a heart problem, a stroke or heart attack or something? A heart attack, I think. And he bounced back like a young man. That was very impressive.
Yes, he did. I was going to say one more thing about Cramer. You're old enough to remember Jimmy the Greek.
Oh, definitely.
In a previous life, I used to bet football. And I would just listen for Jimmy the Greek's picks, and he'd have three games. And I'd take the opposite every time, and I was winning two out of three, three out of three.
He had the best track record of anybody if you just knew how to bet him. Sometimes being a contrarian is your best friend.
Yeah, I got to put down a nice down payment on my first house thanks to Jimmy the Greek.
That's
funny. Send him a thank you note.
I should have. It was a bad day in my household when he got fired. I said, oh, no, there goes my easy money.
Now I got to play on even odds. That's tough.
No way.
So you really did bet the mortgage, it sounds like.
Hey, there you go.
Love it.
Oh, that's good.
What's on your mind today?
Well, that was about it, really. I just wanted to see if I'm the only one that thinks, I admire the knowledge he has. I mean, he can name CEOs and PE ratios of companies I never even heard of. But it's just like, and this is just me, like 80% of the companies he likes. You know, it's like everybody can't be a bye, you know. Bye, 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 you know. Yeah, Lee, what do you got to do to get a solo on his program? You must really be horrible.
Yeah, you'd think that he'd concentrate more on the bad ones because it sells better.
If you look look across the board at Wall Street analysts' recommendations, though, that's probably about in line with what they have. It's so hard to get a sell rating.
Well, they all listen to him.
Maybe.
Who knows? Did you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
Yeah, wild stab. I'm from Chicago, and I'm not saying Chicago, but I'm thinking of Detroit because they got a long way to come back.
It's not the answer.
So okay. Detroit is actually, let's see here, Detroit is 2% above where they were at their peak.
Wow. Yep. Of course, that might have something to do with the declines they were experiencing before the rest of the market did.
I was going to say the average house sells for $12,000 instead of $10,000.
That's it. You can make one heck of a profit now.
I was going to say, I'll meet with you guys this afternoon. We'll go up there today.
There you go.
We'll put some money down.
We'll put our real estate package together and form our own REIT.
Sure.
Maybe.
The guy from Quicken Loans beat us.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, that guy picked, that guy picked a dying place, and he has turned it into something else.
Yeah, he's put billions out there, at least hundreds of millions into Detroit, and I think it's turned out pretty well.
Off, yeah. Good for him and good for Detroit. They needed it.
Oh, wow. You're very good. I wasn't aware of that.
That's actually true.
Yeah, I don't know who's a bigger employer now, Quicken Loans or GM.
I don't know.
It's hard to say.
That's a good guess.
His people don't go on strike, so we can't count them.
Yeah, that's true. That'll be next week's trivia question.
Yeah, okay, I like it. Make a note of that.
All right.
Take care of yourself.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. George, good morning.
Good morning. I was recently at a financial seminar, and the guy briefly talked about something, but not to any extent. I wondered if what you might know about it, and could you explain it? It's called a convalescent care benefits rider.
Benefits. To an annuity or life insurance?
I have no idea. It's a kind of like a policy that you pay like $100,000 and you get $300,000 worth of coverage for 6 years.
Yeah,
you get it back if you don't use it.
Yeah, these products they've been out there for a few years now. They're getting more and more popular.
This one is offered by, it sounds like, was this a seminar by Lincoln Financial Group?
No.
Okay.
Probably somebody represents them. But they're competing with traditional long-term care insurance people. The traditional long-term care insurance market is a very, very tough market. They priced these policies many years ago as they were starting to sell, and they didn't have any experience because it was a brand new product. So as people aged and the claims started to come in for the policyholders, they found out that the average claim was much, much higher than they had ever planned on. I.e., that means their premiums had been underpriced for years. So everyone who is writing it now, and that is a very reduced number from what it used to be, everyone who's writing it now and everyone who's maintaining it now is raising prices as much as they can, as often as they can. Couple that with they have made the underwriting standards much, much higher than they ever used to be. So it's very difficult for people if they have any little problem. Some can be mental and some can be physical. They're not going to be able to buy traditional long-term care insurance any longer. So whenever there's a void, somebody rushes in to fill it, and it is very often the annuity and life insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
So they have started writing these policies now that they call hybrid long-term care policies. That is not a good description. There is truly no such thing as a hybrid long-term care policy. What it is a simple annuity or life insurance product that has a rider on it, like an income rider, but this is a special income rider, and it accelerates payments. Excuse me. It accelerates your payments during periods of time when you would otherwise be collecting long-term care benefits. Can you get $300,000 for 100? Yes. Excuse me, I got a little frog in the throat here. All right, back. And it's like traditional insurance. Most people won't use it, so there is a pool of money held by the insurance company, and yes, they will dip into that to help you out during these times. There is no guarantee that you will need it. There's no guarantee that you will get the full $300,000, but they actually do make some sense. The underwriting is a lot more, a lot looser than it is for long-term care. The annuity business started with this, and their products were frankly not very good. The new ones that are gaining in popularity are written against life insurance policies. I would suggest to anybody who's interested, there is a website you can go to and you can get information and ask questions. And he's a real good friend of ours. It's called StandTheAnnuityMan.com. And if you go to StandTheAnnuityMan.com, there's a discussion of these things, and you can also email him questions and that sort of thing. And he'll tell you a lot more than I ever could. That would be my suggestion. It is not bogus, however. That's the biggest thing is it's not bogus.
So okay.
Look into it.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay, I got to run. Thank you. We'll be right back. This is the Banwi Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwi Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwi.
And I'm Adam Banwi.
And we look like we're about to have a caller on the line, but I would go back to what we were saying about the long-term care hybrid being a bad name. That doesn't make it a bad product. I wish they would call these things something else, and I like the fact that George referred to the convalescent care rider thing. That's a smarter way to look at this than trying to say it's long-term care when it's not. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I would like clarification on something concerning withdrawal of funds from my Roth that I have today. Mm-hmm. Trying to find out, as I understand it, if I withdraw money, I don't have to pay any taxes on it. I guess that's on the original investment. Does that also apply to the earnings that that initial investment makes, or is all of it tax-free?
That depends.
Have you had it for more than 5 years?
Yes, I have.
In general, then, yes, everything is tax-free.
Are you 59 and a half or more?
Yes, I am. I'm 65, so. If I don't
cash
in and I do leave it to, like, my children, does it then become taxable when they withdraw it?
No. It's in fact, they should thank you if you do that.
Yes.
Because they would have to pay taxes if that were a traditional IRA, but because it's a Roth, they would not have to pay taxes on the withdrawals, and so you're just going to give them a big pile of tax-free money.
That was a good answer, wasn't it?
Yes, excellent.
We take good news on Saturday around here.
Okay, thank you.
One thing you should know, though, one thing they should know,
yes,
if you do wind up leaving it to them and they inherit it, they should inherit it as an inherited IRA if they can, which will help them in their own retirement. They will have to take required minimum distributions beginning the year after your death, but they'll be very small, and hopefully they could preserve this money for the long term for them.
But the great news about it being in a Roth is that if they do need the money and take it out in one lump sum, it's not going to create a huge tax issue for them.
Right.
So that's the problem with inheriting a traditional IRA. You can really create a tax nightmare for yourself.
Yes, and they will not need 5 years of ownership, and they will not have to be over 59 and a half to take money out tax-free.
Right.
So it's a win-win-win. You can't do better than having a Roth IRA if you could have afforded the taxes going in, which you all obviously did. So it's a wonderful thing. That's
okay, if I have just a Roth IRA, how do I change it to an inherited IRA?
Die.
You don't. Your kids would have to handle that.
I really would like them to understand that can be done. We don't tell people exactly what to do on the show. We tell them what can be done. Then when a situation arises, then you know how to go get help.
Okay. All right.
That's
Thank
it.
You.
Yeah, do you want to take a shot at the trivia while you're here?
I have no idea. I've been listening, but I'd just be a wild guess.
Okay, well, I'll tell you something. The answer's a little tricky, so stay tuned.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care. That's a good question, though.
Yeah, it certainly was. I think that the Roth is tricky because the best time to put money into a Roth is when you don't have any money.
Exactly.
And so it's one of those things that it's a lot of times an afterthought. A little bit more popular now with the backdoor Roth being sort of, they didn't completely legitimize it
sort
in the tax
codified
bill,
it.
but they kind of did. So now I think you're going to see more people with higher incomes putting money into a Roth if they can. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing for them and their heirs because it's one of the only sources of tax-free money you will ever get in this lifetime.
And I spent a lot of years worrying that Congress would eventually reach in and start taxing the earnings on the Roth. And that fear is fading away over time when I see the decisions that are being made with the IRS. So I find that less worrisome than before.
In fact, the options to do Roths have actually been increasing because the Roth 401k has been it's not offered by a ton of companies yet, but it's becoming more and more popular as an alternative to the traditional 401k. So,
and I like the mix and match. You can put part of your money in there and part in the traditional side, and it's all done automatically as you're withholding from your paychecks.
So the fact that it's becoming more popular and they haven't done anything about it, I think is a good sign.
Well, you get enough people that own Roths, if they start messing with taxing on them, they're going to hear from it.
Yeah, that would not be a wildly popular move.
Yeah, for your elected congressman, that would be like discussing Social Security benefits being reduced. You just don't want to go there. That's the easy part.
No doubt.
Those of you who've been to our website, and those of you who haven't should, that everybody knows we get more compliments on that website. And I give all the credit to Adam because he takes care of it. But it is truly it's a beautiful site, and it has a lot of information on it. Now, my weekly routine now is when I get off of the show, I'll look back on it while I drive home and say, okay, what did we talk about? What am I thinking about? So I want to put a new blog post up on Monday, Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday, and I need a good topic. So I started writing one a week ago, and a strange thing happened. It was about, we haven't reached a new high for a little while. Is that as far as the market has to go? Well, just as I was proofreading it, guess what happened? Market set a new high, and then another one, and then another one. So my research department, who has, by the way, been around for 47 years on Monday, which is our wedding anniversary, she's a very experienced research department. She said, no, you got to shelve this one and do something else because the tone of the market, everything's changed. So instead of that, I sent out a letter to people, and there is a call coming in, but I'll share it with you if I can. Monday, all three of the major stock market indices reached new highs, both intraday and at the close. That was Monday. They did it again on Friday. This bull market, the second longest in history, is alive and well. With all the negativity clouding the media and politics, it may seem surprising that the market has turned a deaf ear. In reality, though, it's easily explained. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi there. Can you give me the question?
Sure. What city's housing market has the most coming back to do just to get to the level it was at before the housing crash?
Before the housing crash?
Yeah. In other words, before 2007 and 8, what city is still trying to make up the ground just to get their pricing back there?
It was a housing crash. Mm-hmm. Well, then I'll guess Miami.
That's a good guess.
It is a good guess. It happens to be incorrect, but it's a very good guess.
So there are seven cities that still have not reached their previous highs, and Miami is one of them, but it is not the one that has
the
furthest
most
to go.
Okay.
Excellent guess. We appreciate the call. Returning to the letter, remember our prior communication regarding politics and economics? Long-term, economics drive markets, and right now our economics are strong. Political influences are primarily short-term aberrations. Investors understand this, and are signaling their support of the economy by driving markets upward. Where will it end? When will it end? Nobody knows, despite the propensity of the talking heads to prognosticate. I do go on for a while in there. I remind people that it's required minimum distribution season. If you have turned 70 and a half, or anybody you know has, and you haven't taken one, if you've inherited an IRA either this year or last year, you're going to have to take them. Look into that. And for those of you who are 70 and a half already and taking required minimums, if you are charitably minded, remember the qualified charitable distribution, which in these days of people not itemizing their deductions very often, can save you a lot of money. If you want to know anything about them, you can call us at the office. You can send us an email. I might even do a little piece on them next week or something like that. But it is that time of the year, and look what happened. I tell people how good the market is, and it did it again. You don't have to be swayed by the lunatics on TV and radio that are trying to tell you that everything's bad. Just consider the source. All the anti-Trump people out there are going to try to make you do something dumb. Listen to us. We'll tell you the truth. All right. A strange thing happened in the housing market back in the 07-08 range. And the people who really got hammered were the unfortunate homeowners of Las Vegas. So of all the major cities, Las Vegas took it on the chin the hardest. They are, thankfully, up 116%
from their
since
low.
Then, from their lows. However, they are still, give the exact number.
17% under.
They got to go 17% more just to catch up to even. That is a pretty dismal period of time for them. But it's happening. So if you meet a Las Vegas homeowner, give them a little sympathy. They might need it around Christmas time. We have to run. We will see you next week, same time. This is the Banway Financial Hour.